Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is Now or Never. And it is Feedback Friday. And there's a lot of things we can be going through. And we just finished. Actually, there was a lot of stuff we did go through. We just finished the ratification debates. And so, don't know how many episodes that was, but I have to go back and count so that we can segment those and get those up on the YouTube channel. The next set of, you know, the next lineup we kind of went through yesterday, so there's no point in repeating that. But I can tell you that you're not alone if you think that you're going to go out and things are just going to fall in place. In other words, if you look at this a snowball, you know, when you take a little ball of snow, or when what forms a snowball, if you've ever seen an avalanche occur, you'll actually see a snowball, or what you would think would be a snowball, and it doesn't really change form. It just goes down the hill with the rest of all the falling snow. Now, if you have a small piece of snow that actually breaks away and can actually gain traction and build, you know, most people think that you're going to create a snowball when you go out. Snowballs don't occur 100% of the time, folks. So if you're expecting things to snowball out of, you know, this effort, that effort, it takes time. As a matter of fact, the snowball sometimes, you know, goes airborne, doesn't collect anything, you know, and travels. But that doesn't mean you're not being effective. A lot of times, and I have to say this because I think we sometimes fail to realize the impact of one person. And I will just liken it to an apple seed. Only God knows how many apples are in a seed. And so you have no idea what can happen when you actually make that connection and you walk away thinking, you know, what I truly failed. I mean, I didn't get anything done. You know, it's easy. And I'll send out the message. Sometimes I feel like I failed because I'm not getting enough traction. So I'm human. We're all human. We all, you know, take the gut punches of life, right? We all get it right smack in the gut and knocks the wind out of us, or at least if we allow it to, it will knock the wind out of us. And I think that most people that have been gut punched should have enough resilience in their life to be able to take the gut punches the older and older we get. It's, you know, if you've never been hit in the gut by, you know, things in your life, then you're one of a million, or, you know, you're truly an outlier. At least let's put it that way. But the fact of the matter is that getting people involved only happens when you're out recruiting. In other words, your recruiting process. I was on a phone call last night with Montana, and I kept on having to come back around. And it isn't unique with Montana. It's not unique with any of the states. I keep on having to come back around and saying the process of growing your group is getting out and doing petitions. Because right now, me here at the microphone and you there listening, we're in a, let's just call it a cone of silence. We're in a backdoor room. We are in some respects, in a secret environment. When we have our phone calls, it is a closed environment. Now, we could put a channel up, and we could actually, you know, have a video screen so that anybody could watch the feed. I mean, anybody can tune in. It is open. But to those people who are caught up in their lives that don't take the time to turn to this channel, to tune into this show, to actually come over to your table, we have to get them somehow to engage. So, I mean, we've got signs, and actually we've got some signs that we will be able to provide you. If you want to set up a table, we've got a few different signs that you can go ahead and order. And at this point, we can give them to you, depending on, you know, how this all goes. But what we want to do is we want to get you engaged, because with every human contact, you're now actually operating in the world, and you're actually making connections that will actually turn around. Because every connection you make, as everybody understands this, is a huge network behind that person. And you have no idea what type of network that is. You have no idea, you know, what this person can do. Sometimes we have people that can do harm. You know, we can get people that could be destructive, toxic. And so we just have to do the one thing that actually will grow your group. And by you growing the group and you getting more and more people to do it, then the more people actually start coming to the table. When you stand up a table with your signs and you're doing petitions, you have to constantly ask people that come over and get interested. You have to constantly ask them, are you willing to help? Can you give us a little bit of help? We need your help. And because 9 times out of 10, especially if they say, wow, this is pretty important stuff, this is stuff I didn't know, then, you know, there are different things you can say. You can say, well, this is just the tip of the iceberg. We'd love to teach you more. We'd love to show you more. And we'd love to have your help. You know, tell people. I mean, use fundamental premises. Just tell them, hey, knowledge is power. And it only becomes power when it's acted upon. So we're here to help educate you. And we're here to help, you know, engage you so that you can actually have an impact. You can utilize that knowledge and exert power. And I think these are the kinds of messages that actually really help people get on board and get committed. Now, when you look at a lot of organizations, they function as controlled oppositions. Well, you got to become a member, you know, if you want to vote, you got to sign up, you got to pay your dues, what have you. And then you just sit there and you're a part of an organization. And that organization has really no clear, definitive direction. And I'll say this, you know, because I can go on about tactical civics. I can go on about the Convention of States. I can go on about the John Birch Society. I can go on about lots of different conservative organizations out there. Oath Keepers. I mean, these are groups that make you feel good. These are groups that are, you know, founded on truths, but they're not groups that will actually get you there. They just won't. They can't. There's no money in taking you there. If they take you to the destination, if we actually get to the destination, their relevance goes away. And I look at it this way. We get to the destination, folks. Now we have unlimited potential. So what's better? The status quo, you know, and feeling good about being a part of the status quo, or actually getting to a destination point that opens the entire world is an oyster. And so I'm hoping that there's more of you that actually start, you know, recognizing that things aren't going to get better. I say this all the time. What makes anybody think or have any belief that, you know, we just need to get these right guys in? Let's just have a Republican sweep. That ain't going to do it. until we start holding public servants accountable, until they know that we're watching and we're holding them accountable, and the outcome of the next election will be significant. We have to impress upon them that it'll be significant. And you know what? It won't be significant, as I constantly tell people, it won't be significant unless you create a movement. And actually, you don't create the movement. The movement will create itself. The truth will actually, you know, continually perpetrate itself, or I should say perpetuate. It will continually perpetuate, and it'll continually exponentially grow. Again, because one person is not a single connection. One person is a network of many connections. And as we bring more and more in, we have this great opportunity. So what we want to do is we want to help you. We're here to help. And we want you to be successful. Your success is our success. And actually, your success is His success. Because there's no doubt in my mind, our Creator wants us to succeed. He knows we're fighting a tough battle, but He wants us to succeed. And I believe He will help us. Even if He helps us, forgive me, a little tongue-tied today. Even if He helps us in the last hour, you know, those who have their lamps full will be able to go meet the bridegroom. And I'm here to tell you, folks, that those who are actually working and engaged in the solution, when that time comes, if we don't make it before then, there's no doubt in my mind that what we're doing is a cause that, you know, He wants done. He wants all people, like, there's no doubt in my mind, our Creator wants us to have liberty in our lives to be able to choose. He does not support enslavement or slavery. He's allowed it because we had to have it. But to be honest, He commanded all of us. Don't think that this commandment was, you know, not important. That all men must live by the sweat of their brow. And the fact that, you know, shortly out the gate, it didn't take long for men to enslave others to have them sweat at their brow so that they could live a better life. And when we look at the corporation, you know, I used to get comments like Kenny B would always be talking about how we're slaves, you know, at a company and so forth. And in a way, we're not, but in a way, we really are, especially in this new world with the mega corporations. We are. The mega corporations are enslaving us. However, prior to today, and even still today, let me ask you this. If you look at the economic engine of America, is that the enslaved major corporations that provide the majority of America and what employs the majority of America? is it small business? Because I believe we're still at that point. We have enough small businesses. Now, a lot of small businesses were attacked by COVID. We still have a lot of small businesses that employ America, which means we still have a little bit of a backbone left. But as things become more and more of a conglomerate, franchise, what have you, that they control all of the restaurants, they control all of the services, that's because, I want to be clear, when we look at corporations and businesses that actually create a culture, you know, every business does this, but when they create a culture of dominance, or I will just say an autocratic type of culture where you do what you're told and or you're gone. In other words, they really inhibit. They don't just inhibit. They require that you participate in repugnant policies and repugnant paradigms. I mean, most all of the global corporations are woke, all of them, because they demand and they actually use your contributions. Because, you know, when we look at the benefits, the compensation package, 9 times out of 10, the compensation package includes your health care. And who pays for that? I mean, you actually pay for that. Folks, if your corporation, even if you're not making a direct contribution, it is baked into your salary. So when you look at a company that makes Coke, you know, when you look at Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola sells a product, and all of the cost that it takes to make that product is wrapped into the price of the product. So everybody's healthcare package, all of the benefits, regardless of how they vary from the minions to the executives, that is all baked into that price. So you can't tell me that, you know, we could actually deflate the cost of goods and services. How? Well, if we actually enforce the Constitution, enforce the laws, and allowed people to say, no, you can't use my labor to support, you know, transgenderism. You cannot use my labor to support these ideals that I don't agree with. Now, when we really look at whether companies are private or not, don't think that they are. There's not a company out there that's actually private. The only companies out there that are private are sole proprietors that don't register. And so those are the ones that they want to get. But, I mean, they've gotten to a point where they just require everybody, even a ma and pa, or what in some cases they call it, what is it, cottage? A cottage type of business where, you know, you're just not making enough revenue to really, you know, justify opening up a business, but they allow you to operate. And even so, they may actually allow you to operate as a business itself. But if you are a business, if you are registered with the state is inhibited by the Constitution in basically not being able to make any laws or enforce any laws that violate the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. So do you think that your company could actually tell you that you can't own a weapon? Do you think that your company can actually tell you that you have to contribute to something that is actually morally repugnant? You have a right to a conscientious objection, and you cannot be punished because you believe that that's morally wrong. They cannot inflict immorality upon you. Now, some people say, well, that's a free will type of thing, and or what they call an at-will work environment. Well, it's one thing to actually require somebody to wear the proper clothes, but it is not appropriate for a business to get involved in the, let's just say, the social programming and social engineering. They can't use those types of things on us. They constitutionally cannot. What I am telling you, folks, is we have this protection of being kept from, you know, forcing us to embrace a religion that we don't have to have. So that's why religion has no place. Ideology should have no place in the work environment. It shouldn't be godless. It doesn't have to be godless, but they cannot actually hinder you on your religious expression. You know, let's just say, you know, you're not apostolizing. So to be clear, as an employee, you have a responsibility to work. And one of the things, because I've employed people, and I still do, I still employ labor and so forth. And I constantly teach young men, because usually, you know, it's hard to hire somebody that's, you know, a mature adult. So when I have an opportunity to help teach a young child, or I should say a teenager, not a young child, a teenager or an adolescent, you know, adult, one of the things I try to impress upon them is the, you know, the concept of an honest wage for an honest day of labor. Now, see, if I'm paying you a certain amount of money, let's what minimum wage or what have you, whatever we agree upon, and you come to work, but you don't work the full time. You're taking a break here, you're taking a break there. And most of these kids are very religious, or, you know, these young men are religious. And, you know, I just place it in context. Do you think you're being honest in how you're dealing with and how you're treating an employer if you're he's paying you for so many hours of work, but you've only worked 70% of the time? Because maybe you had phone calls, maybe you were doing texting, maybe you were doing something other than actually doing the work that the employer has hired you to do. And in the big work environment, in the adult world, you could call that water cooler talk, right? You know, meeting around the water cooler, talking about the game. I've seen people in the big corporate world that got fully consumed, where they did literally nothing for a week because they were just consumed with the problem. Instead of taking PTO so that they've not, you know, why not? Why not take money from the boss? Why not take money from the company? That is a, we call it, that is the attitude of one who has moral turpitude, one who has no compass in understanding what we need to be doing. But bottom line, they can't make you do things that are repugnant. I mean, can they force a person to actually pay for or support something that is morally wrong? No, they can't. And the problem is that the government has actually started mandating this. Because let me ask you this. Where in the Constitution does the government have a right to be involved in gender, in race? Where do they have a right to be involved in orientation or any cultural things or ethnic things? As long as what you're doing at work, as long as you're not bringing in obscenities, as long as it's not creating a hostile work environment, and it, you know, having a cross or having your religious symbols or, you know, reading your scriptures during your break is more than acceptable. As long as you're not out there, but they create these policies where you can't do that now. And I am telling you that no company has the right in America to deny you your fundamental inalienable rights. No state can make or enforce. So if your company makes a policy or rule and they try to fire you because they don't like what you're doing, and what you're doing is not causing harm, you're doing your good job, they don't have really a cause to fire you, other than they don't like you ideologically. Well, you know what? They can't employ people over those types of deals. Now, to be honest, not that I'm lying here. As a matter of fact, I had a good laugh. I've told people before, and this weekend I went with Woody down that rat hole and saying, whenever somebody says, now to be honest, it means that maybe I'm not being honest this whole time. And so I need to myself get out of that. We all do that, and I always laugh when I hear that. It's almost like, you know, I've gotten really good at not saying folks, you know, putting an S at the end of folks, because that's just grammatically incorrect. And so it is people, not folks. You know, folk is a person and or group. But anyway, it is the plural tense. It's like saying peoples. Anyway, when we look at whether a company can actually create these types of laws, folks, they can't. Because the federal government cannot, and the state governments cannot enforce these laws, because they have to use their court system. And the companies don't have the ability to create laws. They have no legal standing in America. But when we come back, I'm going to tell you how this has all become perverted, because in a way, the companies are the new governments of tomorrow. I'll explain this in just a sec.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so what ended up happening as the government started moving in, especially the federal government, started going down these paths of unconstitutional powers, roles, responsibilities, and so forth, we really started seeing how they actually started for the principles of good. Now, I have to emphasize, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is only constitutional in the District of Columbia and is only constitutional in the territories that the United States is still managing to become states. In other words, they can't possess a territory within a state. Once a state becomes a state, there is no more territorial status. It is a state. Everything within that state boundary is that state's, and because that state is a sovereign entity and it has equal footing with all states. In other words, they can't create territories, reservations, or anything. And we go over this, but over time, the government has actually started getting involved with the best intentions, like the Civil Rights Act, the best intentions, just like the Civil Rights Act of 1866. Right? The Civil Rights Act of 1866 was the best intentions, but they quickly realized that they could not go down the path of invoking the Civil Rights Act because they can't enforce it. So before the ink had even dried on the 1866 Civil Rights Act, they turned and started actually working immediately on an amendment. Instead of overriding Andrew Johnson's veto, instead of trying to override it, because they easily had the votes to do that, they knew that they had to amend the Constitution for it to be applicable. So thank God, thank our Creator, that He was inspiring these men to do the right thing, because they created an amendment that actually made it impossible for the Jim Crow laws to ever be established. Because when you read the Bill of Rights, when you read the privileges and immunities concept, and this constitutional standing of privileges and immunities are not necessarily what we would call civil rights, but they are in America. But technically, civil rights in the world are the rights that government gives you. In America, the civil rights and or our inalienable rights are basically the same thing. However, and I say that because there are very specific things that we have protections from. But more importantly, government can only do those things that are enumerated within the Constitution. So what that means is there's nothing in the Constitution to allow them to be involved in marriage. There's nothing in the Constitution that allows them to be involved in ensuring, you know, who's being employed here or there. But they do have a requirement to ensure that nobody is going to pass a law that denies access. So in other words, when we look at the restaurants during the Jim Crow laws that would not allow blacks to eat, or they gave them, you know, very specific seating, or trains that did not provide, you know, all citizens to have full access. In other words, the 14th Amendment basically made it possible that all people could do all things that are open to the public, that you could not deny somebody access or a place to seat. When they came out with the separate but equal, in other words, the Plessy v. Ferguson, it was Plessy v. Ferguson, and the concept of separate but equal. In other words, the trains just had to have a separate compartment or a separate area, or like on a bus, a separate area to seat, you know, so that that's where this group of people would sit. They couldn't do that. They couldn't segregate. In other words, you can't differentiate between one person and another. You have to treat your business the way it is. Now, do you have a right to actually, do you have a right to not bake a cake for somebody that, absolutely. If you're, and this goes down the path of wedding cakes. What is a wedding cake? What is a wedding? A wedding for 90% of everybody that has lived today, that is living today, I'd say probably 90% of those people believe and understand that a wedding is a religious ceremony. Even if it is being done by a justice of peace, it is still a ceremony that was founded on religious ideologies. There wasn't a government that was formed a long, long time ago that says, you know what? We have all these people that are alive, and before we die, we need to have marriages, so we're going to institute marriage. Actually, the concept of marriage was instituted by God in his design. And the family is the nucleus of our society. So you can't tell me that the origin of marriage actually came and evolved from just having a lot of people and everybody was going to die off because they need to have kids. And so the government decided to invoke marriage so that they could have kids, because they were really moral in those days. They weren't just, you know, cannibals. Now, those who believe in this evolution theory, that we just evolved from carnal creatures into this civil society, science has yet to even come close to be able to prove this. Have yet to. The Miller-Ulrich experiment, and I've covered this before, but the Miller-Ulrich experiment does not prove anything other than if you inject enough electrical charges into a water clay mixture solution, it will create the building blocks for the life cells, like a petri dish, to start forming. It does not have what it needs to form. In other words, for life to actually form, you have to have the code. You have to have the DNA, the genome. You have to have the code that tells that cell how to form. That's one of the things that technology has actually just been able to disprove this concept that we evolved. The hardware exists on this earth for life to exist, but the software does not. It did not until it was injected by our creator. Anybody that says otherwise, and they say, it might have been, the chances of that ever happening. As a matter of fact, they have found, you know, meteors, or supposedly these rocks from space that have, you know, some form of life. And forgive me for going down through all these rat holes today. It's just been, you know, really chaotic, but I want to get these points through. That when we look at government, let me close the loop on this thought of evolution. Even though there have been supposedly bacterias and things of some form of life, there is just no way life would have gotten to this point on any other planet unless that was by the design of the Creator. And so even as we learn more about the universe and how it was actually created, how it formed, then I'm telling you, folks, there is more to prove that God created all things than there is to disprove, as we keep on discovering. And as Newton basically said, those in science who work to disprove God are not serving science at all. Because what we should be doing is we should be discovering God's creations and all things created, instead of actually saying, well, how can I prove God doesn't exist? Because now you're just grinding an agenda. Instead of being open-minded, you are now operating with a closed bias. Anyway, let me get back to these companies. So companies have actually, over time, because of money, as money accumulates, money becomes an influencer. And when you get to a point where businesses can command more money and move money around, and they can consolidate money, like one of the biggest organizations that have probably the most wielding power is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. George Soros has his Open Borders Foundation, an Open Society Foundation, so forth. And all of these are insidious foundations, because what they do is they buy up companies and they start dictating policies. They buy up governments. How do they buy up a government? Well, they don't have to go and actually say, we're going to own you. What they do is they own the politicians that run it. Now, in America, that's all unconstitutional and illegal. Oh, but we allow it unconstitutionally, because if you really think about it, this is why we go through all elections are local. When you look at a Republican form of government, then the only people that should have any say regarding their own elections and their own representatives are those people who are within that realm of election. That is unfathomable. We actually went through this in Massachusetts, how they basically warned that people with money from out of state could come over and affect the politics of your state and get it to do something that it shouldn't do. And isn't it ironic that Massachusetts, the state that actually mentioned these things in the ratification debates, is the state that has become so godless and so anti-Republican form of government? I mean, they don't even have counties anymore. How do these things happen? Well, I don't want to say it's by design, but I do believe Satan has a plan, and Satan's executing his plan. It's pretty simple. What we have to do is we have to start learning what we need to do, but understanding how businesses have now become the new frontier of government. If you really look at the UN, the UN is owned and controlled by businesses. It is the globalist front, and it is basically pushing forward to subjugate all nations and all people. They're stripping nations of their sovereignty, and what ends up happening is we'll have this international government, and then we will have basically this ultra employer. When you really think about it, and I talked about this in my first book, it is antithetical for a business to actually go down this statist ideology, because ultimately the business has to surrender to the state. But what if the state is actually owned and operated by the elitist group? Then they're all sharing. The windfalls all go into everybody's pockets proportionally to how they decided to divide everything up. Now, I don't believe that everything is being divided up equally, but I believe power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And when we look at Bill Gates, and I'm saying this because this is actually, we've gotten really good content that we're going to be able to include in our medical freedom that actually proves and connects the dots of how Bill Gates, a United States citizen, has violated the laws of the land by actually working with and collaborating with other institutions and governments to actually operate and conduct, you know, crimes against humanity and conduct things that are absolutely rebellious against our own Constitution. So what do we do when we have people like that that are actually doing those things, that are operating, and they're actually moving us in a direction to actually take and pervert our government and collapse our government? The 14th Amendment calls that rebellion against the Constitution. And so, folks, this is why we go through the Tory Acts. This is why we went through the Tory Acts at the beginning of the year. I try to always read the Tory Acts on January 2nd. Why? Because that's the day that the first Tory Act dropped. And from that point on, or the primary Tory Act dropped, the one that actually said we need to start monitoring everybody. Why are the Tory Acts important? Because the Tory Acts actually prove that if somebody is here that is an enemy to the Constitution, at that, in those days it was an enemy to this new government, because they hadn't even really formed a government other than the Articles of Association. But every colony gathered up the British loyalists and exported them or deported them. And they were deported without their funds, without their property, and all of that property was basically confiscated. In other words, what you have to do is you basically have to strip the citizenship from these people, because you got to remember that a U.S. citizen is entitled to these privileges and immunities. And a part of those privileges and immunities is, you know, a right to trial, due process, those types of things. And so once we get to a point where we can prove that these people have been conducting rebellion against the Constitution, then it's over, folks. What we have to do is we have to revoke their citizenship, and then we take everything that they have, and then we actually deport them. And so, when we look at how many people in America have that kind of money and have been doing such evil things, do you think Warren Buffett has America's interest in mind? No, Warren Buffett has Warren Buffett's interest in mind, and his interests align a lot with Bill Gates and company. You know, these people may not seem as maniacal as Bill Gates. You know, Bill Gates has come out openly and said he wants to see, he basically states we have too many people and we need to depopulate. People need to die. And so why do you think Bill Gates got heavily invested in the 90s with pharmaceutical companies? As a matter of fact, we've got the document that actually talks about how many pharmaceutical companies he started investing in. He became the primary holder of all of these. And guess what? He's making millions from who? From the government. In other words, he's gotten a big fish customer that has deep pockets that can drop trillions of dollars into his lap. I am here to tell you that even though we do not see all of this happening, it is happening. And we have really evil people that are aligning things, and they got so much money that they can come around and buy up all forms of eateries, restaurants, and so forth, that if you want to go out to eat, you're going to eat at the state restaurant. What I mean by the state, the government restaurant. And they'll have a few varieties because, hey, we all can't just eat, cafeteria crap, all the same things all the time. They have to keep us happy. They have to, because if we're not happy, then we will revolt, which is why circus is so important. The Roman Empire realized that if you kept the people entertained, then they won't realize that they could actually do something, they could unite. And even though as bad as it got, they still went down to the entertainment center, the circus, the Colosseum, and just constantly engaged in all of this free entertainment. Folks, we have free entertainment today. Well, actually, you're really paying for it, aren't you? How many people have television that they're receiving via the airwaves today? Well, there are many. But those things are dying out because the new generation doesn't even think about those things. They just want what they want from the internet. So more and more, we're actually paying for everything ourselves. In other words, we're working for what little stipend we're going to get from what we will soon see as statist services, whether that be eateries, whether that be what have you. Now, I believe that when we really look at this, and we can break this down at another time. I need to get into some other things that are really important, but when we really look at certain services that cannot be competitive, like power, I mean, the fact that the energy companies are raping us, the electrical companies are that we built with our tax dollars have become private and now are raping us and basically stealing as much disposable income as they can possibly get away with. Folks, we got to wake up. It's not about being woke, it's about being wakened, and it's about taking a stand, and why I was saying at the very beginning, we all, you cannot excuse yourselves, and you cannot wash this blood on your hands off. The only way you can wash the blood on our hands, we the people are bearing the blood on our hands because we were given a self-government, a government where we had not only the ability, but the responsibility of holding our public servants accountable. And they've been selling us downriver, and they've been moving us away from our Republican form of government into the most perverted government ever created. So, if you really want to start washing your hands, say that you can say, I have no blood on my hands. You actually have to start getting involved in demanding our self-government back, in demanding our public servants comply to their oaths of office and they comply to the Constitution. So let me just dive into a couple of things that we usually do anyway. And so one of the things that I want to do is I want to actually tell you that we have coming up, I've got a couple of guests that we're going to be bringing in. I'm not sure of how many people have heard of, I believe it's Harry the Greek. And I want to say the other person that we're bringing in is Mr. Callender, and I think it's Todd Callender. For some reason, I'm not on the right computer, but now I am. And yes, it is Harry the Greek, and yes, it is Todd Callender. Now, Todd Callender has broken the story and has been driving lawsuits against many of the central executive branch. In other words, there's not one person in the executive branch that has been able to produce the fact that they have taken an oath to office, which is legally required. And there are other public servants, elected servants, like Kamala Harris, who has refused to take an oath of office, or at least that's what is being dubbed, and that's what we're going to talk to him about. We're going to go down this because, folks, what we do is everything we do is centered on a public servant's oath of office. Now, I know that there's plenty of places. I know Paul Venable told me that he went down this last year when they were all being read in, that they were all sworn in at the Capitol, and he watched every single one of them. And they take these oaths, and they don't take them seriously. They don't think, they believe that they can get away with murder. That's because you are letting them. They will continue to get away with killing us and doing whatever they can to taking our money and our lives. Most people don't think it that way, but most of these idiots are so clueless they don't even realize what they're doing. And it will be too late when they finally do realize that it'll be, when they finally do, like I said, it'll be too late. So we've got these interviews coming up, and what we need to cover that I haven't really covered in a long time is we now have the after effect. In other words, we saw when they established FedNow, we saw the prices of silver and gold go up. Have we seen them come back down? No, now that the FedNow has been live for about a month or so, we're now seeing them come down. And right now, gold was at 1814 on March 7th. It's now down to 1895. So it's still up a little bit, but it has come down well over $100+. Silver was at $20.07. today, currently, when I looked at the chart today, it was 2283, which means it's come down from what, $25, $26, $27? I mean, it was up there. It went up, and it actually moved the most as far as movement goes, the higher percentage, but silver's very volatile. And right now, because the shortage of true silver dollars, Liberty dollars, and the mint is doing this deliberately. They're deliberately underproducing, which is why many of the silver exchanges have actually started minting their own pure silver coins. So anyway, as we start looking, we're actually going to watch the cost of gold and silver probably come down to nothing. Or I should say down to nothing. It'll get down to probably even lower. And as people start moving into the digital currency, what do you think that's going to do? Do you think that that would have a negative effect or a positive effect? I believe that the globalists, they have to actually marginalize the price of gold. They have to make it so that, you know, it just, but that won't happen. That won't happen until after they forced everybody in. Because they'll basically make gold and silver what they would consider an illegal commodity. Why? Because it becomes a commodity. If you have gold and silver coin, it becomes an untraceable commodity. Government cannot allow you to have a transaction that they can't trace. They want to control. And when you look at the digital currency bills, when you look at what the new digital currency will be, it's just like what they're doing in China. It'll be a social credit system where they will actually control whether you can buy or not based on your behavior. And you haven't been very good lately. You've been complaining a lot about Biden. You've been complaining a lot about government and the good things we do. And therefore, we're only going to let you pay for your mortgage and be happy that you get that. You're going to starve for a little while. And so, you know, you want to be able to spend money at a regular pace and with, you know, the norms that you've had before, you better start behaving better. That right there, you cannot tell me that this is the ultimate enslavement. I mean, even in slavery, slaves still had some level of freedom when they were outside of the view of their masters. The new master of the world, welcome to the new slavery of the world, folks, but the new master of the world are the globalists and their government. And they're very jealous of everything that you're doing that does not pay tribute to them. So this is what we're getting, folks, and this is the direction we have. This is why, when you look at the cost of everything that is in front of us, that is a lot of blood on our hands if we don't stand up now. Now's the time, and you can do this. You can actually get out there and be successful. I want everybody to know, and I want everybody to understand that, you know, it doesn't happen overnight, but it is a building effect. Only God knows how many apples are in a seed. And so this is why you have to actually plant seeds and basically plant the knowledge in people so that they can become as effective as they potentially can in God's hand. Folks, we're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.